right. We are live on YouTube. Whenever you're ready to start, Haman, I'm seeing that it's 7 o'clock on the dot.
Okay. And I'm sure more people will join slowly, but we can at least get going. All right. Okay, guys, first of all, good evening, and thank you for joining the class. This is session 2 of module 12, The Wisdom of Emptiness. Okay, so as usual, I would prefer that mentally you go through your 3 prostrations in your mind, and we usually say Om Namo Manjum Shriye Namo Su Shriye Namo Tama Shriye, and visualize bowing down, and you're not bowing down to anyone except you are basically respecting the teachings and the triple gem. You're humbling yourself and developing good qualities and admiration for the teachings, and just based on your comfort level. And imagine everybody around you is also doing the same. And it's always a very humble experience, and just do 3 prostrations in your mind.
Haman, I am hearing the YouTube streaming in the background. Everyone is on mute except for you and me. I'm wondering, I think it is coming from my computer. I'm so sorry.
That's okay.
Okay. All right. Continue. Thank you.
No issue at all. Okay, great. All right. So now that we've done the prostrations, we're going to bring ourselves to the class mentally. All right. I know some of you have worked today. Some people have been busy, or you've done all different things in your home. The point is, you are here now for this hour and a half. And so to bring your mind to this place, let's just do our typical calm abiding breathing meditation. And I think you already know that if you're sitting in a chair, obviously you want your back straight, legs and your feet on the floor. If you're sitting on the floor, obviously you want to sit in a lotus position. Your arms are relaxed. Right, your thumbs are touching, in a nice teardrop form. Your head is slightly tilted, jaw and mouth relaxed, teeth slightly apart, lips touching each other, and then your tongue rests lightly on the upper palate, back of your teeth. Eyes could be shut in the beginning, but you prefer to have it slightly open, and then take a few deep breaths and scan your body for any discomfort you may have. And as you position yourself, bring your mind and your focus onto your breath. Breath is considered neutral. And all you do is observe or focus on your breath. Don't squeeze yourself, just keep your mind on it. Just look at the inhaling and the exhaling, your stomach going in and out, or maybe the cool tingling sensation on your nostril. And just keep your mind on that for a while. If you start to see your mind wandering a little bit, just observe it, but lightly and easily bring it right back onto your breath again. This is the way you develop concentration. So while in this much calmer state of mind and in the presence now, let's set our motivation. Okay. So let's motivate ourselves to make an effort to gain an understanding of emptiness. as was taught by Buddha in the lineage of great practitioners such as Nagarjuna, Chandrakirti, Lama Tsongkhapa, and rest all the way up to present. The subject being taught is the actual antidote to all suffering. The means whereby enlightenment is attained, something that is within our grasp because we have the mind and we can understand the antidote. If we apply ourselves, then there is no reason why we cannot attain this precious understanding and experience the profound view. Not only will we ensure our own liberation from the suffering and the cause of suffering, but also it will enable us to become a perfect cause of happiness for all living beings. As much as possible, then generate the thought that by whatever means I must achieve the state of supreme enlightenment for the sake of all living beings. Therefore, I am going to listen and try to understand these teachings. We have to be flexible and understand what we can. What we don't understand now, we will later. We have to be patient with ourselves and develop this on our own pace. This is part of the practice of patience that the bodhisattvas engage in. They have to practice the six perfections, also called the six paramitas. One, generosity. Second, morality. Third, patience. Fourth, enthusiasm or joyful effort. And then developing concentration or developing meditation equipoise, and ultimately realizing the wisdom of emptiness. You can practice all six while sitting and listening right now. You practice generosity by listening because we are acquiring the knowledge and to be able to have something to share with others. You can practice morality by restraining the mind from engaging in a wrong motivation for listening, such as listening for sake of increasing one's self-importance. Patience, of course, is the ability to endure difficulties without getting upset. We have to endure these difficulties and make an effort. The solution is to practice patience. You practice enthusiasm while listening and enjoying the teachings. Right? Enjoy the teachings by appreciating their value, such as how they open up the doors to happiness and develop the abilities. At the same time, in the midst of all that analysis, you have to practice concentration. It is possible that you analyze too much and you could lose the track of what's being said. However, when your attention returns to the listening again, you could have lost the chain of thought. Therefore, you have to learn to balance. And then ultimately, you want to practice wisdom while listening. It's discriminating the actual meaning of what is said from all the possibilities. This is the intelligence we apply when we think about what is said. Lastly, what the teacher intended, you need to also listen what the teacher intended by the words, reasoning, and examples in the stories. So there's a lot that you can accomplish just by listening. You can also use whatever you have been taught to help increase your understanding. This is an opportunity to apply it. Okay, thank you. Let's bring your attention back to the class. So the plan for today, we already finished the meditation, the basic calm abiding meditation and motivation. I'll go through the review of what we covered last class, few definitions. Again, re-emphasize the 12 links. We covered it very briefly last time. Maybe we'll take a look at it at a slower pace. We'll go through Heart Sutra. We'll talk a little bit about what is ignorance again. If you notice, everything we've been talking about is the ignorance that we have, not knowing the way the reality truly is. But let's talk a little bit more about it. And then we'll talk about this personal identity, how it can help, and how it can help you understand the concept of emptiness even further. And then finally, we'll do our meditation at the end. And it's a great meditation, transition of awareness during death. We don't think of it often, but it's good to go through it sometimes. And then we'll dedicate, okay? So that's the plan for today. And I will also cover things that we haven't covered in the last class. I missed a few topics because the video went on for longer than I expected, but we'll go through it today. Again, just a very quick, brief historical background. How this course came to be, how FPMT teachers met in Italy and brainstormed and created the course outlines, right? And Thupten Tende is the one that was given the responsibility to design this syllabus, basically, on emptiness. And the goal was to acquaint students with the concepts and to minimize the jargon. However, as he goes, when I read about his writings, he goes to explain that if you are serious, it's difficult to make it so plain. You have to somehow get familiar with some of the words because the presentations are technical in nature. The concept of emptiness is not as simple as nothing exists, I think, right? You have to go into much more detail. And so you need to be familiar with some of the words, okay? And then you also realize the benefit. You're following the footstep of a beautiful, I call it the chain of command, the lineage that we have all the way from Buddha. And if you remember in the last class, we kind of started with Buddha. But we also, and then of course, we will go into and further into the little more details of the class today. But I wanted to give you, we also started very nicely with an introductory video from FPMT that's hosted by Richard Gere. And you got a nice 26 minutes to half an hour, an overview of emptiness, the introduction to the topic. And then what I did after we did our calm abiding meditation, we got into this two books that I was reading. And I found it very, I found them very interesting for the fact that they get you right into the topic. And the first book that I took into mind as a preface was by this guy called the Guy Newland, Mr. Newland. And why I like the book is in the preface, it starts right away with the fact that we falsely believe that we exist solid in an independent way. Kind of throws you right off the bat. What do you mean by that? And then it says that when you think about your life from infancy, childhood, infancy, teenager, and then we have some of us are facing old age and death, that it's not stagnant. Things are impermanent and they are changing. Our bodies are disintegrating all the time, moment by moment. And all this time, beneath this ever-changing and aging body and mind, we somehow feel that this eternal solid self. But it's impermanent. It is dependent arising. We need, you think about your own body. You need water. You need cells. You need oxygen. We need food. We need each other. We need family, if not, at least friends, society, and it goes on and on and on. So it is not like this solid, independent self. So I kind of like that right from the get-go, he gets right into and has a segue into emptiness, right? So we talked about that. If I have my slide on that. Okay. And then I had another book that I used from, I believe I have that book with me, from Tashi Seren, The Two Truths. And it was important because the use of the word, two truths, relative truth, ultimate truth. we can also call it conventional truth and ultimate truth. And he gets into how we are so used to, in the conventional truth, everything does exist. There's Michael, and there's Karen, and there's Linda, and this is Hemant, and we are there. We have a body, we have a mind, and we have a name attached to it, right? That's conventionally things exist. However, at a deeper level, when you look at things properly, you see that there is one taste. There is no this such as this diversity, okay? How things exist. And if we just look at that from that perspective, things start to, you start to put things in place and you realize how we are caught up in this conventional reality, which I call it superficial reality. Okay, so he kind of breaks through the mold, it gets you right into it. And then what we did was we decided, well, let's take a look at all of those things. Is this how it is? And what does it mean? What do these words even mean to us? So that's how we started the program. And so then to go back into a lineage, we started with Buddha himself, right? And we started talking about Buddha, that after his enlightenment, he actually taught for like 40 some years. And his teachings were then organized in this 84,000 bundles and then further categorized into these three baskets. And this they call them the three baskets of Vinaya or discipline, another basket of sutras or discourses, and the third basket, they call it Abhidharma or discipline. Okay, everything was organized. Further, generally, they were categorized into two other pieces for the Mahayana. So what happened was, when Buddha was enlightened and he was teaching, all kind of people came to him, right? You had individuals that came, monks that came, kings, courtesans, so many people came of different capacity. So he taught people according to their capability, right? And so, for example, for the Mahayana practitioners, which is the universal vehicle, that's our lineage, Mahayana, is the family of compassion. Our goal is to become enlightened, ultimately to benefit others. So the compassionate family, you can put it that way. And so he taught his discourses based on this kind of practice. On the other side, there are also the individual vehicle, right, practitioners or individual vehicle, and it's called the Hinayana. And they are individuals that simply want to get out of this and want to liberate from this cycle of life, death, birth, so forth, and want to be liberated. And so he taught according to their capacity, those teachings. To further, he realized after becoming enlightened, he realized that why we are bound in this circle of samsara. Birth after birth, we come back. Why? And he went through the 12 links, which we will go through today in a little more detail. But what key point was, the root starting point was ignorance, not a passive ignorance. We all have ignorance. If you don't know chemistry, you could be ignorant of chemistry, right? Or if you don't know physics or magnetism or electricity, you could be. This is actively misknowledge of the way things exist, actively. We just don't know how to see things the way they are. Okay, so that's a different ignorance we're talking about. Okay, and then so we looked at that. I also introduced you to the 12, the basic Heart Sutra, and we talked about how Heart Sutra was, it came with 100,000 verses to smaller 25,000 verses. Ultimately, it was this one small category of Heart Sutra itself, and ultimately to the mantra, Tayatha gate gate para gate para samagate soha. And it was the essence of what Buddha taught on emptiness, right? Very profound teaching. It was called the second turning of the wheel. We'll go through that today a little more. And so the word Tayatha gate gate para gate para samagate soha, if you were to very basically break it apart, it says Tayatha means like this or like that. Gate, gone. Para gate, gone beyond. Para samagate, gone to the further shore, other side. Bodhi, awakening. Awakened or awakening, soha, so be it. So we need to go beyond, okay? And that's how he mentioned that the word mantra means man, means mind, and tra means to protect. So when you use the mantra, it's just not like a parrot. It protects your mind. You need to focus on the words, then it becomes innate nature, and it starts to flow in your system, and then all of a sudden, you are right there with the words and what it means and that visual. And so it always protects your mind. At least you're not thinking of something else at that time, right? So it's important, that's how we do mantras. What I did not cover in the lineage was, so we started with Buddha. So there, if you know that India was the base at the time for universities, teachings, there were a couple of universities called Takshila, Nalanda, there were one other. And people from all over the world came, primarily from Japan, China, Asia Minor, Sri Lanka, all of them came to learn there, a lot of the training. And they taught various subjects, including alchemy and other physics and other things, but primarily Samkhya or philosophy, very, very rich in there. And our tradition comes from the schooling of Nalanda, okay? And now after they're digging up how big it was a huge monastery, and they're now talking it was 1200 or 1250 BCE, before Christian era. There's all kind of dates in there, but very old. And a lot of our teacher and lineage teachers come from them there. So if you go on Sunday class and they talk about Shantideva, or when we talk about Nagarjuna, you hear words Chandrakirti. These are all philosophers and logicians from that school. So that's the lineage. And so a little bit about Nagarjuna, and why I bring Nagarjuna is because there were many schools of emptiness in some form existing. They were all debating these concepts, right? There were four schools, and not important to know the details of them. But, you know, for namesake, there was a Svatantrika, Vaibhashika, Chitramatra, and they are all the slight differences on how they view emptiness. Some viewed emptiness of self, but not something else. Some got very close to it. But Nagarjuna, with a solid logic, he used this four-point analysis logic called tetralemma view, and we'll go through that at one point, four-point analysis. He brought it even further. He said not only sentient beings, but all phenomena is empty of inherent existence. And he took it much deeper, and he refuted the commentaries of that time. And so many logicians started to say, hey, this is the way. And so that is the view we follow, our Geluk tradition follows, and Lama Tsongkhapa and on us all the way down. So that's why Nagarjuna is very important to know, that this is the lineage we are following. And there were commentators after Nagarjuna named Chandrakirti. And his commentary was very important because he talked about Nagarjuna's wisdom of emptiness. So I'll tell you a little bit about him. He was a youngster. He was born in South India. And at birth, his parents were told that he's not going to live long. And so his parents, to gain merits, they went to a monastery and were asked to do all these meritorious pujas and gifting and so forth. But in the end, as he grew up, he wound up in the monastery and became monk at a very young age. And the beautiful part of that is that he was connected with, this is a legend, they say that there's a place in Kathmandu, it's a monkey temple near Shantipur town. I've actually been there. It's a Bodhnath temple. And in the bottom is a cave. And some people have attempted to go in there and they see frescoes and all that, but then they've locked it up. Apparently, the legend is that a lot of the wisdom sutras of emptiness were kept by in that realm, and they call it the mer people or Nagas. And he was given the responsibility to allow to take it out. I don't know the details, but it is that even if you do Wikipedia, it will mention that. So it is there. And so I trust that it was, that's how he brought upon. And there's a whole story on how he came in connection with them, how he associated with them, and how he brought these teachings. And Nagarjuna is widely considered one of the most important Buddhist philosophers and a pioneer in the lineage of Mahayana teachers. Okay, and he's the founder of our school. And our school is called Madhyamika School of Mahayana Buddhism. Madhyamaka means, Madhya means middle, the middle way. Okay? And remember, we always talk about middle way. Don't go into the extreme nihilism, nor everything is concrete in the middle. And he formed that school, the middle way, along with Aryadeva and so forth. And anyways, he, the most important piece is that he really, really brought about the concept of sunyata or emptiness into forefront with his logic. And he says for Nagarjuna, as the Buddha in early texts, it's not merely just the sentient beings that are selfless. He says it's all phenomena are internally not existent. They don't exist inherently, sorry. So that was the main point of his. And he further says in his book, all is possible when emptiness is possible. Nothing is possible when emptiness is impossible. If everything was rigid, frozen, and not changing, then nothing is possible. You would be static. Nothing changes. But because things change, because things are dependent originating, and you have a mind, guess what? You can change your mind. Our Geshe-la said that last Sunday or Sunday before. One thing we have, we are really able to, is we are able to change our mind and therefore change the course of our journey. So when you listen to emptiness first, it can be very, I don't know, disparaging. You feel like nothing exists and what the heck? You know, it doesn't matter. That's where we go immediately. Why? Because we are so used to seeing things a certain way. And you think emptiness means that all goes away. So nothing exists. So then what the heck, what am I doing? That's where our mind goes. When you deeply understand the concept, when you really understand emptiness in a proper perspective, you see it in a proper perspective, then you realize you are who you are because of that change, because of dependent origination. Right? Because we are interdependent. That change brings about the change in your mind. You observe things. You can change your mind. You can do other things. And then when you understand, you have the capacity and capability to understand even the concept of emptiness. And Buddha has himself said, you want to get enlightened. This is one of the most profound teaching. This is how you go about doing it. So that's the subject matter. So I just wanted to bring the lineage into the picture here so you know that this is not something Hemant read in 15 different books and brought it up. It is coming from our teachers. This is how it's being taught all the way from Lama Tsongkhapa all the way to us. And so the next person, of course, I want to talk about is...
Can I interrupt you for a second? We do have one question that follows what you were just speaking of.
Yeah.
Douglas asks, do Zen Buddhists fit into this lineage that you spoke of?
I am not too familiar with Zen Buddhism, except that they think of clarity and nothingness also. So there is a concept of emptiness in all over the place. Is that their approach is we approach from the fact that we need emptiness, bodhicitta, two of these things to attain Buddhahood because we want to get enlightened to come back and help sentient beings. Whereas other Buddhist schools may have a individual liberation of this shattering of our mind and liberating and getting nirvana. So I think Zen maybe may fall into that. Now there are many different factions in Zen within Zen too, and some may lead to that, but I am not too familiar with that. But when you look at how they do koans and how they meditate and very quiet, is a wonderful practice to quiet your mind. But we are actively engaging in Mahayana practice. We are actively working, analyzing, getting through it, and getting through the stages of the Mahayana path. And just for knowledge sake, you go through the path of accumulation, you go through the path of preparation, then you go through the path of seeing, then you go through this complete meditation, nothing else, one single-pointed meditation, and ultimately path of no more learning. And you get enlightened, you become Buddha. And when you become Buddha, you have two propensities. You have knowledge and that you are omniscient because you're aware of everything, but you're omnipotent, wanting to come back to help others. So it's the lineage of the school dictates what their next step may be. But all of these schools fundamentally also stem from the Buddhist teachings of some form. So I don't know the details of what they actually teach in much more detail than that. Yeah, I hope that answers some questions you're answering some way. Okay. Anything else, Linda?
No, that's it for now. Thank you, Hemant.
Okay. So what did Nagarjuna say? This is a great slide. I love this slide. He said in the first word, in his book, again, a big word, Madhyamaka Vartra, is basically translated the root of wisdom, fundamental wisdom of the middle way. The first verse reads, I prostrate to the perfect Buddha, the best of teachers who taught that whatever is dependently arising is unceasing, unborn, unannihilated, not permanent, not coming, not going, without distinction, without identity, and free from conceptual distinction. For Nagarjuna, dependent arising is one side of the coin and the other side is emptiness. Okay. And what I also wanted to say is that in another book, The Precious Garland, I think, of Nagarjuna, he said, this is very important to know, that the nihilistic person goes to the lower birth and the realistic person attains rebirth. But through knowing the reality and not relying on the two extremes, one is liberated. So always are you balancing between what is factual from these extreme views. Okay, so please contemplate on these words. When we use this word interdependent, word sunyata or emptiness, the middle way, I want you to at all times, you're not gonna, some of you will get the answers because you've been reading or doing something. Some of you may still have a twist in your mind, like, what the heck are you talking about? But it's going to happen. You just know how we see things. And as we go through it, I want you in your background always relate, why are we talking about this? How does it relate to emptiness? How does it relate to the reality of things? I want you to always be questioning that in your mind and see if it answers some of your questions as they progress, okay? And so it's important to know that everything, you know, we just have to know that everything is based on dependent arising. Emptiness and dependent arising are kind of interchangeable. That makes sense, right? Interdependence makes sense. It is not that complex that we are dependent on so many things, right? You look at anything from fruits, trees, birds is dependent on so many things. And we all need water, we all need oxygen, we all need mom and dad, it goes on and on and on and on and on. So it's always that phenomena. And all of that, while all these things are happening, causal and resultant, but nothing exists from their own side. It's just ongoing phenomena. Okay. The next one I want to talk about is Lama Tsongkhapa a little bit. Lama Tsongkhapa is the founder of our tradition, Gelug tradition. You go to Kadamba Center, you see him seated there, like Atisha, and then Lama Tsongkhapa and his two students. And then, so he was a very highly attained yogi. And of course, he had the attainments or siddhis, we call it in Sanskrit, to be able to communicate with Manjushri, the deity of wisdom. Okay, he's the Buddha of wisdom, Bodhisattva of wisdom, I should say. And he asked Manjushri, you know, so see if I can, who should I rely on, the teaching of the wisdom of emptiness? And the instructions or the response was, you should rely on Nagarjuna's teaching. And so then he was asked, whose commentary should the teachings be, we should follow? And he said the word Chandrakirti. So you will see that Chandrakirti was a commentator on Nagarjuna's writing. So again, substantiating the lineage of teachings of Nagarjuna. So this is to let you know that again, it is very important for you to understand that we have a lineage of these teachings. Okay? Lama Tsongkhapa again, if you were to not read anything about the entire Lamrim, these three things are very important. And if you have taken Discovering Buddhism before, I'm sure you've heard of the three principles of aspects of the path. And the three principal aspects of the path are renunciation. What does that mean? Does that mean you chop your hair off and you just run away in the woods? No. You need to have a yearning. You need to have an eagerness to not be born in this cyclic life, death, life, death, life, death. You've got to know that you want to liberate yourself. It's like wanting to look for a job, but you don't know anything about that job. You want to become a Buddha, but we don't know what Buddha is. So you want to develop that yearning to become that, right? So you want to renunciate this cyclic life cycle. Then what it says, you may master renunciation and wish to achieve supreme enlightenment, but unless the wisdom perceiving reality, you cannot cut the root of cyclic life. So make efforts in the ways than to perceive interdependence, right? So in other words, emptiness. In other words, renunciation, learn emptiness, and then what is the way we live when we are survived? Develop bodhicitta. These three things are important aspects. You want to have this as your vitamin, your knowledge, that these things are absolutely essential for your enlightenment. So if you're reading, studying, and going all over, or kind of pay attention to these three areas and just know what the three principal aspects of the path are and the teaching by Lama Tsongkhapa, it will help you a lot. Okay, any questions so far?
Remember, if you do have questions, feel free to put them in either chat box, whether it's on Zoom or if you're watching from YouTube. I'm monitoring both of those. So if questions do come up or comments, feel free to leave them in either of those chat boxes.
Thank you. All right. So just a quick note, nothing major here. There's an antidote to obstacles to liberation. We've already talked about it. You need to absolutely understand how to remove ignorance, learn emptiness. And then when you combine with compassion, you gain the full knowledge. And so basically it's just an obstacle, antidotes to the obstacles to the liberation. So you need to know these two things. Okay. And so really make that motivation, that intention in your heart and determination to realize emptiness. And know that you can do it. Nowhere does it take, it will take eons. Nowhere does it take, it tells you it will take you 15 lifetimes. We have the capabilities to look at misconceptions and conceptions. And even as you're growing up, how many misconceptions have you given up and realized that was the wrong way of thinking? I'm a different person now. We've done that all the time in our life. And so this is no different. You just need to make the determination that at some point I will be able to sense, at least have a glimpse of emptiness and get better at it. At least you can start, right? So it's very important. Okay, just a quick little change. The two truths, we know these words. I have a tendency to bring in vocabulary as we go along so you get a little better at some things. Conventional or relative truth. Okay, what is true to be valid conventionally? Right? Think about what it's saying. You know, true valid conventional consciousness. It is also called concealer truth or all obscurating truth. The way we live, we kind of see things from our own view, our eyes, senses, and that's what we think is the reality. And then there's the ultimate truth, the understanding of ultimate nature of reality, that things are empty of true existence. You can also hear words like method and wisdom, two wings of the bird, that you need the method and you need this both wings to fly. You hear this kind of thing. When you do a lot of readings, you will come across this all the time. So I figured it was good to know that method is the emotional or compassionate side associated with development of loving and kindness, compassion and bodhicitta, and supports the wisdom realizing emptiness. Whereas wisdom part is the logical, more cerebral side, okay? And the way you understand this, or the example of the way you understand wisdom is by hearing, contemplation and meditation. So those who are taking the tests for the emptiness, I would pay attention to the words, the wisdom, the three wisdoms of hearing, contemplation and meditation. Ultimately, there is the wisdom of emptiness, which frees us from this cyclic existence. Okay? And in the bodhisattvas, or to attain Buddhahood, the practitioners engage in both method and wisdom. So good to know these two truths, conventional, ultimate, and method and wisdom. Oops. Okay, This is another test question, just to keep in mind. Somebody's going to ask you somewhere along the line in your training, what is ignorance? We've been talking about it since the first class. The root of all problems is ignorance. If you look at the 12 links, it starts with ignorance. Ignorance is not realizing the true nature of reality, right? We have been talking about it. So that's the ignorance we are talking about. It's a fundamental delusion. So take a look at that for a second. See if it's, let it go in your system. I threw in the last word, Prajnaparamita. It's doing this on its own, I guess. It's okay. I don't know what it's going to do with this. Okay, what's going on here? Okay, now we're okay.
I don't know what happened. It looks like it's in the self-play mode or...
Maybe some formless being doesn't want me to talk too much. So let's take a look at the word Prajnaparamita. The only reason I threw that in, again, little jargony, but it is, Heart Sutra is called Prajnaparamita Sutra, means wisdom of perfection sutra, discourse. So Prajna means wisdom, Paramita means perfection. You will also see the words, your six perfections, we went through that in our intention, right? Generosity, morality, patience, enthusiastic perseverance, developing concentration, and ultimately seeing the wisdom of emptiness. Those are also called six paramitas or six perfections. So I thought it was good to know those words. Okay, the 12 links. There you go. So that it wants to do that. So let's go through this one more time. What are these 12 links? So as I mentioned, Buddha, Buddha's explanation of how delusion and karma bind sentient beings into samsara, the cyclic life and death cycle, causing them to be reborn into suffering again and again and again. And I want you to think about this carefully. And you can even search this and you can find this in our FPMC teachings also. But I want you to kind of think about this because the very first one starts with the word ignorance. So though this is shown in a linear way, just know it's a little bit complex than that. It can work in from different angles, but the root of it all starts from ignorance. Okay? You don't need to worry about all that complexity. Just know that this is what he taught. And so we'll go through that right now. So the first is ignorance, and that's the lack of understanding how everything actually exists. Right? It's by mistaken knowing that all phenomena have inherent or intrinsic existence. That's how we see. That's the ignorance we have. So then what happens is, the next thing is you create karma. Due to fundamental ignorance, beings get engaged and will engage in actions of body, speech, and mind, the three doors, that have potential to then compose or create future suffering. And these activities are called compositional actions. All the things we do. Then the third thing is it says consciousness. What that really means is causal and resultant. So each time that a compositional action is created, the previous one, the potential for the action to produce a future rebirth is infused into its consciousness. All the actions that we do, good, bad, ugly, whatever the actions we take. It then resides within our continuum, and then it's activated and connects with the future rebirth. So that's another link. And then later on, when the karmic potential is activated and in a new birth has begun, there's a link of name and form. Name is mind, form is body, right? So mental and physical aggregates. So when we talk about our aggregates, you remember from the last class, the five aggregates are? Form, feeling, discrimination, mental activities or karmic actions, and consciousness are called aggregates. This is what makes us, the mind and body. Okay, so that's called aggregates. So this is what happens here. So name and form is formed and developed throughout the life of the new embodiment within the cyclic existence a form and mind. And then later on, the six senses come into play. As the body and mind develop, the six senses, five senses plus the mental consciousness or mental consciousness, that will enable the six consciousness to know their respective objects gradually, right? Through the ear sense, taste, eyesight, you start to sense everything. You start to see, you start to taste, you start to hear. And then what happens? The next thing happens. Once you start, your faculties and your senses are working, then you have a contact. Of course, upon the aggregate. So all your aggregates now, the sense sphere, the object of consciousness, the I in us, the I, will then start distinguishing objects as pleasant, unpleasant, neutral. Right? So then this I will then become entangled in all the objects of desire and hatred and ignorance. You can see that how it starts to build. And then you develop feeling. Once you have the pleasant feeling or the not so pleasant feeling, what happens? You start to want to keep the pleasant feeling and not go towards the unpleasant feeling. So we start to choose. We will find three feelings of happiness, unhappiness, and indifference respectively arise. And they fall under this influence, and thus the mind becomes happy or unhappy or indifferent. Then they continue throughout your life. And then the next thing happens is craving. So in response to the feelings you have now experienced, right, you have a craving to serve, to increase that desire. You want to provide real satisfaction, right? You're attracted to that happiness, feeling of happiness, okay? And you don't want it to diminish. So what do? We jump around things to keep temporary happinesses, busy life, right? We buy things, we shop things, we do these things to keep us happy. At the time of the death, though, it is very important for these next two things, craving and grasping. The ninth link is the grasping, and the intensity of the craving increases and becomes very strong. It develops into this mental factor that heightens, the desire, the attachment. So your experience is now your body is failing, and maybe you just are, that's where your mind wants to go, what it's familiar with, what makes it happy, what makes it comfortable. So whatever your experiences are through craving and grasping, that's where it goes. And guess what happens at that point? That's who you become. That is your identity. So this body is failing. Body does not matter, but that's where your mind is now. And then what happens? You go. And then in the next birth, what happens? You have the propensity to carry those seeds with you. And then you take a birth, and it's kind of late at that point. You carry that propensity with you throughout your aging and death again. And then again, we go into this cyclic of the same thing. We continue to do this activity throughout our lives and not realizing that we are ignorant to the truth. And then again, we fall into this trap all the time. So a lot of these practitioners practice how to see the truth and eventually liberate that mind from this craving and clinging and fear and so forth. So it's important to know these 12 links in that way. Again, it is very linear. Just gives you an idea of how we keep ourselves going through life. Any questions?
I'm not seeing any questions right now, Hemant, but if anyone does have any, you can feel free to unmute yourself and ask a question or certainly type it in the chat box. Either way is fine.
Okay, I thought this would be a good getaway from me just talking, but to see something visual nice, okay? And you've seen this picture, when you go to Kadampa Center at the entrance, you see this beautiful thangka. So I thought most of you may be familiar with it, but I thought to just bring it up. Since how is this related to emptiness? So what you wanna know, this is called the Wheel of Life, okay? And Wheel of Life is, we just talked about the 12 links, didn't we? And how we keep in the circle of life. So let's start with that. So the centerpiece, the very center, you see the three things, a pig, a rooster, or a bird, and a snake. They represent the three poisons. Guess what the first one is? Ignorance. then the attachment, and then the aversion. Okay? So when you think about it very clearly in your mind, you should be thinking, geez, if I don't know the way things exist, the next thing happens is that name and form consciousness senses, I am here. The big I comes in. Me, I like it, I don't like it, attachment. And what I does not get? Aversion. So it starts from the center. Then based on your karmic activities, guess what happens? This is the second wheel is actually showing you, it represents karma. The left side, the white side, shows the good karma and ascending to a higher realms. And the dark ones showing falling, potentially depending on your karma, falling through the lower realms. So the next third circle on the top, with the big pieces in it, if you look at, it's broken into six pieces. The top half is the upper realms, and the lower three are the lower realms. So based on your karma, those are the lives you get. For example, if you look at 3 o'clock or 4 o'clock, you can see the animal realm. If you see the 12 o'clock, you see the God realm. Okay? And then guess what the last circle represents? The 12 links. That's important. Those are the 12 links we talked about. Okay? So that's amazing. And then the person holding this entire wheel is called the Lord of the Death sometimes. It also represents other things like impermanence and all this. And then, let's see, I have one more thing I wanted to see and see if I can find it from my notes. Okay, here. So the fierce being holding is, like I said, represents impermanence. Then the moon on the top indicates liberation, that you can liberate. And then on the right-hand side, on the top, you see Buddha pointing. He's showing the way. So if you look at the Four Noble Truths, there is suffering, dukkha. There's the causes of suffering, and you now know the three poisons, ignorance, attachment, aversion. There is cessation, and there is the path. And so this is the wheel of circle. You have the 12 links that keeps us in this clutches of this samsara, and you can get liberated, and Buddha's teaching can show us the path out of this cycle. So I thought it was interesting.
We do have a question about that, Hemant.
Sure.
Karen asks, it seems like some of these links have to come in between aging and death, basically while we're alive. So why are birth and aging and death all right together at the end of the 12 links?
Well, you know, I can see that very easily. It is not so linear, like I said. You know, it just for teaching purposes or for simplicity purposes, they put this links into this 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. But when you start to read in a little more details, you find that they kind of interact with it at different points in life. But generally speaking, as what is trying to tell you is, as you are alive, while you are alive, we are ignorant of the truth, which then causes this chain reactions of things in the next life. You start to get this consciousness of I and the name, and then you start to get the senses that seeds that are in you, that have gone into you, start to develop again into this cyclic. The whole point is to show you through this 12 links is what brings you back in life again. So we can, of course, Karen, I will certainly talk with you. If we talk about 12 links, it may take a little time, but there is a really nice write-up on how the 12 links actually work, right? But it's good to know, because we are talking about ignorance being the root cause of all the main problems. So I wanted to bring that up again to show you how things can happen because of ignorance. When we don't know things, then you start to create this I, me, attachments to senses. And then what I don't get, I'm upset. What I like, I really love. So this hate, love, anger, all these start to develop. Then you crave, you cling, and then that pulls you through the next life, because that's what happens when the body is not working and the mind is working. It has a magnet type. It's like a power of magnet. It goes to what it's comfortable with, what you know. And so that's what happens. And then you are back in that cycle again. that's just the very basic way of explaining it, but I'll be more than happy to tell you why they belong in between that life and age and birth and all so forth. I will certainly get to that. Okay.
So and Naga was interested in that write-up as well that you're referring to.
I will bring that up at maybe even the sixth class. When we have a little time, I'll just take up Carl out a little time to talk about that. Okay, so I'll take a note of that. Third links. So now we're going to talk about Heart Sutra. So I don't know if you guys can read or not. I hope it is. The fonts are big enough. Can you read? Okay. And I will read it, and you can certainly read it with me in your mind, but just listen to it at least, and let me go through that. And it's important that you understand this. And at some point, this will become go-to. It will answer a lot of your questions. In the beginning, it's tough. You may not understand it, but there are many discourses explaining this. There are books, there are commentaries. And so we'll at some point, we'll touch some things. But at least for today, it's very important that we talk about emptiness and not go through Heart Sutra. It is the essence, okay? So here, so let's see if I can read this from my larger book. I have one
quick tip to make it larger on your screen. If you are in the side-by-side view, there should be three little bars in between the slide that Hemant is sharing and in between Hemant's video. And if you just put your cursor there, you can slide that bar as far to the right as you can get it. And that makes Hemant's slide larger. So you can try that if it looks too small on your screen.
Okay. So I'm going to go slowly. The first part of Heart Sutra, Wisdom Sutra, is called the prologue. Okay. So where it says, thus did I hear at one time the Bhagavan was dwelling on a mass of Vultures Mountain in Rajagira, together with a great community of monks and a great community of bodhisattvas. Okay, just gives you the picture. It's called the prologue. The uncommon prologue. At that time, Bhagavan, meaning Shakyamuni Buddha, was absorbed in the concentration on categories of phenomena called profound perfection. Also at that time, Bodhisattva, and I'll just call it Mahasattva, Arya, Avalokiteshvara is what you have to just kind of think about, looked upon the very practice of the profound perfection of wisdom and beheld those five aggregates also as empty of inherent nature. Here comes the five aggregates again. What are they?
Anyone want to take a stab at it?
What are the five aggregates?
Just unmute. Karen saying form. Go for it, Karen.
Okay, form is one of them for sure. Like, so that's our body. I don't know if you can see me. I've turned my screen around.
Yes,
I can. So form is the body. And then we have feeling, which is good, bad, neutral. I like it. I don't like it. Discrimination is our perception of things that helps us understand what we're seeing. And then compositional factors, I don't totally understand because it keeps saying everything else, but I think it's everything else. You said everything else that's a mental activity that's not in the other four.
You're constantly chattering. So everything that doesn't fit very clearly in it can fall into compositional factors right now.
Okay. And then consciousness.
Consciousness. This is what makes sentient beings. Form, feelings, discriminations, right? All the mental activities, and then consciousness. That's the aggregate. Okay, so it's very important. That's why I gave that definition last class. So you know that when we, thank you, Karen, so that when we go to Heart Sutra, it's important that he says that beheld those five aggregates also as empty from inherent nature, no feelings, no consciousness from inherently existing. Okay, so now the actual sutra, how Sariputra asked his question. Then to the power of Buddha, the Venerable Sariputra said this to the Bodhisattva Avalokiteshvara. How should any son of this lineage train who wishes to practice this activity of profound perfection wisdom? It's a question. So the answer, Avalokiteshvara answered, he said that, and the Bodhisattva Avalokiteshvara said this to Sariputra, any son of the lineage or daughter of the lineage who wishes to practice the activity of profound perfection of wisdom should look upon it like this, correctly and repeatedly. Beholding those five aggregates also as empty of inherent nature. They don't exist on their own. Form is empty. Emptiness is form. Please note, it does not say form is emptiness. It says form is empty. Inherently does not exist. Emptiness is form. It's like the basis. If form is empty, emptiness is form. It's the basis of it. Then it says, emptiness is not other than form, and form is not other than emptiness. Again, it is trying to allude, if you go into some little more reading, you'll find out it's talking about interdependence there at some point. You will understand, we'll talk about that. In the same way, feeling, discrimination, compositional factors, and consciousness are also empty. Okay, so you have to tell your mind, what does that word empty again mean? Not empty meaning nothing. It does not, it's not existing inherently. In other words, it is dependent arising. These things come into effect through many phenomena and causes and conditions. It does not just pop up on its own and say, here I am. That's what it means, empty. Okay? So Sariputra, likewise, all phenomena are emptiness. All phenomena, without characteristics, unproduced, unceased. And when you see unproduced, meaning, you know, we want to go to beginning. What was the beginning point? Something happened, egg or the chicken type thing. You know, the Big Bang. Something had to have a starting point. What it's saying is unproduced, unceased, stainless, not without stain, not deficient, not fulfilled. There's a lot of commentary on those words. But anyways, just realize what it means is nothing exists inherently, even in phenomena. Sariputra, therefore, in the emptiness, there is no form, no feeling, no discrimination, no compositional factors, no consciousness, no eye, no ear, no nose, no tongue, no body, no mind. When I read that first time, I was so scared. And then realized what that really saying is, that we put so much credence toward taste and senses and all that, but they don't exist on their own. It is also independent arising. Right? You need tongue, you need sensory organs, you need capillaries, you need blood cells, and goes on and on and on, right? So it's independent of everything. Therefore, no tongue, no body, no mind, no visual form, no sound, no odor, no taste, no object of touch, and no phenomena. There is no eye element, and so on, and including no mind element and no mental consciousness element. There is no ignorance, and yeah, oh, sorry. I should have gone to the next slide. Thank you. And so anyways, it goes similarly, there is no suffering, origination, cessation, path. There is no exalted wisdom, no attainment, and also no non-attainment. Sariputra, therefore, because there is no attainment, bodhisattvas rely and dwell in the perfection of wisdom, the mind without obscuration and without fear. Having completely passed beyond error, they reach the end point of nirvana. All Buddhas who dwell in these three times also manifestly completely awaken to the unsurpassable, perfect, complete enlightenment in reliance on the perfection of wisdom. And then for it goes to say, therefore, the mantra of the perfection of wisdom, the mantra of the great knowledge of unsurpassed mantra, the mantra equal to the unequal, the mantra that thoroughly pacifies all suffering, should be known as the truth, since it is not false. The mantra of perfection of wisdom is declared tayatha, gate gate, paragate, parasamagate, bodhisoha. Sariputra, the bodhisattva mahasattva should train in the profound perfection of wisdom just like that. So now it was admired by Buddha. Then the Bhagwan arose from that concentration and commended the bodhisattva Aryavalokiteshvara, saying, well said, son of the lineage. It is like that. It is like that. One should practice the profound perfection of wisdom, just as you have indicated. Even the Tathagatas rejoice. The Bhagwan, having thus spoken, the venerable Saradhipati Putra, the Mahasattva Avalokiteshvara, and those surrounding in the entirety along with the world of gods, humans, and all the other deities, asuras, and gandharvas, are overjoyed and highly praised. That's spoken by Bhagavan. And if you remember, I told you there were five stages to the path: Mahayana path, path of accumulation, path of preparation, path of seeing, path of meditation, and path of no more learning. When you go through this, then we say form is empty, emptiness is form. That is the path of accumulation. You're gathering information, and path of preparation, beginning to meditate on these concepts. And then when it goes into Sariputra, likewise, all phenomena are empty, without characteristics. At that point, it becomes a path of seeing. They can very clearly see that. You've gone through all of these practices, and you're very easily able to see that. And then the next thing is Sariputra, therefore in emptiness, there is no form, there is no feeling. When you go through that paragraph, you are now in meditation. You clearly see how things exist and how things are not inherently existing. A perfect view, 100% concentration. That's called path of seeing. And then you become Buddha. And guess what? When you become Buddha, no more learning. That's how they have dedicated this entire. So there's a lot more commentary on this, guys. I have one of these things. At some point, if I find it, I will give it to, it's a very well explains this entire word by word. What does it mean when it says emptiness is not form? What does it mean by unceasing or stainless? All of those things are in here. And if I can find it, I will email it to you. I will put it on the link.
Hey, Matt, I did find it, and I included the link in the chat box for everyone.
Oh, wow. You are something else. Good. Excellent. So any questions? This is a very good. So we'll do this, if time permitting. We'll go through this Heart Sutra more and more and more, okay? It's important that you know that this is the essence of emptiness. And it first time, second time, it may throw you off. Like, wait, what does this all mean? As you learn more about it, you start to see how deep it is and how profound it is. And then you realize and you can then relate to it. Okay? All right. So let's talk about, we've been talking about ignorance all along. Let's look at it a little more deeper. Okay, so give me 1 second. Okay, so ignorance, let's talk about ignorance. So we've been talking about ignorance is the root cause of all of our problems. Okay, so we're to start with this misknowledge, okay, is that is the root of cyclic existence, not a mere lack of knowledge. It is an active misconception about the way things exist. Okay, so, and remember, that one thing I would like to say is our mind, the main function of the mind is what? Just to know. Its job is to know, to apprehend, okay? And to engage in an object. And it's to ensure that we are not misapprehending things. So, and again, also to know that two kinds of mindsets. You have a faithful practitioner and another one that is an analytical practitioner. A faithful practitioner, if a teacher says or his guru or lama says that this is the way things are, they'll just say, okay, that's the way it is. They have faith, they have conviction, and they do it. Now, as they're doing it, they may analyze few things. So there is some level of analytical view in it, but typically that's how they approach things. And another is an analytical practitioner. They question everything, has doubts. Okay, and cannot put teaching into practice unless those doubts are eliminated. The fact is, we kind of have both. It's good to know that there are these two types of practitioners, and we kind of have both of those concepts. A little bit of conviction, otherwise you won't be learning. A little bit of faith and trust, and a lot of questions in the back of your mind. That what does this mean? Who said it? Where does it come from? Does it really make sense in today's world? That kind of thinking goes on. But you must challenge it, you must analyze it, and you must come to your own conclusion. And you will see where it says Dharmakirti, talks about Dharmakirti, who was a very big logician. He mentions also that it is natural for us to actually apprehend things the way things exist actually. But what happens is the superficial causes misconception. And he talks about external conditions, internal conditions, strong emotions. So let's talk about that. And remember, everything we say relate this to emptiness. Why is this important? Because the reason we are not able to see the way things exist is because of ignorance, and how ignorance functions in our regular life is to many reasons, such as external conditions. For example, sometimes in a wind, you can see a bush move, and for a minute you think it was somebody walking. That could be an external condition. I go on walks and I see a leaf. For sure, that looks like a bird to me. Till I go there and it doesn't fly away, then I know it's a leaf. And sometimes it looks like a leaf and a bird flies away, or a butterfly. So we have this kind of external things going on all the time. Internal conditions, you can go on and on and on. For example, let's talk about emotions, strong emotions, internal conditions, or sickness. People have schizophrenia, bipolar disorders, all kinds of things that go on in our body. You could have a hearing problem and not listen well. You could have a bad day and you don't want to hear what somebody's trying to say, or you already have your story made up. No matter what you say, I'm going to get you out. I'm going to put you down. So we come up with a lot of these external and internal conditions and strong emotions, right? Let's see what else. Oh, and then we go further sometimes and we speculate things also. We don't want to listen to somebody and we want to fill in the gaps, right? So I think of it when you're late to work, sometimes look at the stories we make up in our brain or mind. Think about that even. We just make things up. And it is very fascinating. We fill in the gaps. We start to speculate things. Oh, he must have meant that way. That's what she meant. And so forth and so forth, right? And so it is related to probably to our pride. It does not admit our ignorance. We think we know it. We got it. And that's why we are unwilling to make actual effort. We are so, if you really think about it, our ideas and our language is limited. And we revolve in that world with just combination of those ideas, giving credence to some and not to others. And we live in that little cocoon and we think we know it. And then you put two people who talk similar subjects can have totally two different viewpoints. We see that also. So it's important how this ignorance comes into play. And I will tell you, the good thing is it can be corrected. Our mind is very powerful. It can train. You just have to make an effort. And remember, learn to be little pragmatic about things. Be factual about things. It's okay to have, healthy argument in your mind, not to trust things right away. Challenge it. Look at it. Is it the truth? And we have the capacity to do that, but we kind of flower things up a little bit with our own emotions and mind, right? And what happens, I was looking for the word skepticism, and healthy skepticism is a good thing sometimes. Now, what happens according to Dharmakriti, if you don't use that side of your mind, a healthy skepticism doesn't mean belligerently, you're wrong, not in that way. Learn in a very mindful way and question it. How come? Why? Seek, and then you'll find out, and then you will be convinced yourself, and that's how you make your mind work. And so healthy skepticism, and you have the ability to do that. And through analysis, we use wisdom to free ourselves, and then what happens? It's good to know that there's a cause for all these problems, and if there's a cause can be removed. We have the ability to do that, and that means we can free ourselves from this ignorance. This is very important. The cause of cyclic existence, ignorance, which is the only misconception, is something that can be eliminated by anybody who has mind. Okay, so make an effort. So let's talk about destructive emotions a little bit, anger. Ignorance is not only the cause of uncontrolled death and rebirth, it is also the cause of destructive emotions as we are right now. When you have anger, just think there is no wisdom there. Behind that action, it is utterly destructive. Okay? So when you act in anger, what happens? You are filled with hatred for something. Then what happens after that? You have a hatred. Just take an example. You can take politics or whatever you want to take. You can get so preoccupied with it that now you have stress. Now you hate somebody so much that you even think, I wish this person dies. Not only that, some people take it even further and go actually and kill somebody. And we've seen it in protests and stuff like that, where somebody gets shot. Now think how that anger, without knowing the truth, we somehow think that that person or whoever that your person of hatred is inherently wrong. You know, they still have family, somebody who loves them, somebody, they may be wrong in your view, in your ideology, in your mind, fine. But look at the facts and see, where does anger take you? Also think about how we come home from work. We are mad at a situation at work. Where do we take our anger out? To somebody who has done nothing to you. We do that all the time in so many ways, right? So it's very important to know the truth, how this ignorance works. And what we are trying to do here is slowly filter this ignorance out away from us and keep the pure nature the way things exist. And when you start to visualize how things are interdependent, how things exist, then what happens is you don't put so many things on top, layer over layer over layer. And that's why it's important to know the 12 links and the wheel of life. And the whole idea is to show you that it is because of this obstacle that we have created, okay, then what has happened is we can't see. We have a veil, a fog in front of our eyes, and we can't see the truth. And so these techniques, these meditations, these discussions are to slowly remove that. So you start to see the glimpse, and obviously it requires effort from your side. It requires reading, contemplation, meditation, and challenging your mind. It will at some point start to happen when your practice becomes in such a way that you can start to see that you're not going to label things so intrinsically. You will start to see this beautiful, blissful way things exist. And it also helps your nature. You don't get into drama too much because you know the person could be having a bad day and that's their problem, not your problem, right? And so anger is a strong negative emotion, needs to be gotten rid of. And so remember that Thupten Pandey says, when someone interferes with you, with what you want, it depends on you wanting something. If you did not want something, then that person could not interfere with you. So remember that ignorance is the problem. And the last thing before we go into meditation is a personal identity that can help us understand it. So remember that if somebody were to ask you right now, who are you? Ask yourself, who am I? We have a prefabricated answer. So, I'm a mother, I'm a father, I have this, and I work, and I have a job. Take that out. Who are you? Answer that question honestly to yourself. And what will happen is you'll find out, you're not going to think about the orange shirt or the black shirt I'm wearing or the burgundy shirt I'm wearing. You're going to go to experiences. I'm a generous person, I'm a mean person, and we all have those kind of thoughts. And the reason I'm mentioning this is when you're about to go into the next life, before that, and when your body is going away slowly, your faculties are not working, guess what happens? You have fear. Fear of not knowing what will happen next. And guess what it relies on? It relies on experience. It relies on that experience of what you're familiar with. And so when somebody says, acquaint yourself with virtuous thoughts, see things the way things exist, cut the root of ignorance and be kind, be compassionate. Why? Because once you realize that, guess where your thoughts will be? In those things. Otherwise, deep down, we all have some drawers that we have to open and cleanse, right? We all have it. But we need to work with it and fess up to it and say, you know what? that's not what my last thought should be. My gosh, I don't want my life to come out again, and that's what my primary consciousness will take me because of clinging or craving, the 12 things, right? So think about that, and that's called personal identity. When you die and go into Bardo, you don't recognize that body. All you recognize is whatever that goes with you, right? So that fear, it's important to not have that fear. And what is suggested is just take refuge. Whenever you have that problem arising, learn to go into refuge. It's a wonderful thought to have. And that's called personal identity. And all of these things are ultimately related to understanding the true nature of reality and how we can change so that we can actually see directly perceive emptiness, okay? All right, so this is the time to get into, we have a few minutes to get into our closing meditation and dedication. Okay, so position yourself. Okay, so let's close with the meditation on transition of awareness during death. We'll meditate on the disappearance of the familiar mental states we experience during life. The way to do this is by imagining a gradual transition in our awareness that may occur during a natural death experience. So don't worry, you won't hasten your death by imagining it. Tantric practitioners incorporate such imagination every day in their life meditations without shortening their lives. So what we'll do is to imagine a sequence of mental events that tantric texts describe as occurring during natural death. And also when tantric yogis control their vital energies to experience increasingly subtler states of mind. To begin with, I want you to adopt a very nice posture and relaxed posture with a straight spine, all the seven postures of meditation. Make sure you're relaxed. Sit comfortably. This is called the Virochana position, by the way. You see when they sit on the floor with a full position, sitting position, it's called the perfect sitting position. However, right now with Zoom and all that, you can be sitting in a chair or I have no choice, but as far as your feet are on the floor, you're perfectly fine. So set the motivation by recalling that you have the potential to be free of every fault and the perfection of every quality. If you realize the potential, you will experience supreme happiness forevermore. So at this point, clear your mind of scattering and dullness by just simply focusing on your breath for just a minute. Now imagine that your body is shutting down. Your sight dims and eventually goes altogether. There is not even the appearance of the back of your eyelids. Your hearing grows faint until all outer sounds and even the sounds of your body disappear. Slowly, you start losing the sense of taste. Your body grows numb. You no longer feel weight, temperature, soft or smooth, hard or rough. You lose all sense of bodily movement. Now your sense of smell leaves. Meanwhile, your thoughts are changing. As your senses grow dim, your thoughts appear more clearly, like a clear dream. Familiar images, however, all appear equal, as if you've become a detached observer. Your experience of these mental objects become neutral. That is, neither pleasant nor unpleasant. You lose the ability to recognize these objects. You forget their names. You even lose the sense of caring what is going on or that there is a purpose for anything. You let go of the stream of thoughts as there is no reason to hold on to it any longer. The thoughts fade away into the darkness and disappear altogether. The darkness is not absolute. There is an illumination like the night of the full moon. Be aware of this without naming it or thinking about it, like the alert stare of an infant. Imagine the white illumination gives way to a red illumination, like the sky at the sunset. Stare at it with intense awareness. Imagine that this light fades away into darkness, and the darkness grows deeper until it is absolute. Although there is nothing there, notice there is awareness. Notice how transparent it is, like crystal clear. Notice there is no center or periphery, no subject nor object, distinction. Stay in the clear awareness. When you can no longer hold your attention within this state of utter simplicity, at least notice how concepts form, starting with the subject-object distinction. Notice how this distinction provides a basis for identity characteristics, such as appearances, purpose, identities, feeling, tones. And then notice how grasping at the reality of all this leads to more solidity until awareness is directed through physical sense doors and connects with the physical objects. So what we were doing through this meditation was gaining insight into the nature of ourselves. You can bring your attention back. So let's dedicate. Determine that you build on whatever insight you might have gained through the class tonight and this meditation until you achieve the supreme insight. And dedicate your efforts to become a perfect cause for happiness of all living beings. Okay. So next session, before I go there, I have a minute. I wanted to ask if everybody will actually read their reading requirements, the three reading requirements I had asked. If anybody can say a word or two that yes, they found it interesting, they found it hard, and did they read it? There were not only 5 or 6 pages, I think. Anyone wants to volunteer to say yes? What did they find interesting or confusing or whatever? Any input?
Well, I'll just say that I read it and I really, really enjoyed it because it clarified some things for me. I've been trying to read some other books on emptiness and they're kind of hard to read. And I had some misconceptions that were cleared up, and that was very helpful.
Thank you, Karen. And the reason I gave you those readings are they're very small. You can read it literally in less than half an hour. And if you read it again, maybe you take 5 minutes more, but you will find yourself really understanding this concepts of non-duality, looking for the I, and how to look at emptiness. Very easy reading, actually. So I do have some more reading, but I want to make sure that the class people, you guys are actually reading those things, because it's important that I can only go through an hour and a half certain concepts. But if you augment your practice or your class with those readings, I'm not asking you to read big books or anything like that. It is simple reading requirements. These are really easy readings and good readings, and you'll find it very interesting. I would suggest that you at least read those. Okay, and I wanted to look at which, the next one I think is the duality. There's one I want to talk about, and give me 1 second. Oh yeah, so I had asked you to read The Wisdom of Emptiness as number one. Second was Seeking the I and The Two Truths. Very small reading, 5 or 6 pages, guys, anybody can read it. In the next class, I want you to read only one thing in addition to the 3 things that you haven't written. How to Meditate on Emptiness by Lama Zopa Rinpoche. That's your homework. Okay? I want you to read it. I might even have some questions for you guys from there. And please at least define these 2 questions in your mind. What is emptiness? What is ignorance? And what does emptiness have to do with liberation and enlightenment? Think of those things. Again, what is emptiness? What is ignorance? And what does emptiness have to do with liberation and enlightenment? Just try it. Give it a try. Doesn't matter, no wrong or right answer. Good practice, because sometimes we hear these concepts again and again and again. We have to twist our mind to be able to articulate some of those things, and then it settles with you better. So think about those things. All right. Time is done. I want to thank you. And I hope you found it at least helpful.
Thank you, Hemant.
Thank you.
We did have a couple of others say that, yes, they had read it and it was confusing. And another one, Helen, said she read it but wanted to review again. And then Charles is brand new to class, so he had not read it yet.
Yeah, so
thank you for coming, everyone.
Yeah, so take your time, read it again. It's not a lot of pages. And then highlight things that doesn't make sense to you. Keep them and take a look at it. And when you find sometimes, go to the next reading, you'll find a meaning for that over there. It's really amazing. That's why I made sure that you went in a certain sequence. Okay. The one that sometimes they're not able to express it properly are things like the duality and stuff. They get really little detailed, but you see that these 3 readings are not that complex. There are some areas that may say, well, wait, let me read that again. What does that mean? It can happen, but you can very easily get the gist of what they're trying to say very clearly within that reading. But if not, we have some classes where we'll have just open conversations. And we'll certainly like to discuss that. So again, read them again if you haven't, or at least try it again to see if you understand it differently, and then read the next one, okay? How to meditate on emptiness. So with that, I'll just say thank you, and I'll hang around unless somebody wants to talk for a few minutes.
Thank you so much, Hemant.
Thank you, Hemant.
Thank you, Linda. Thank you, guys. Thanks for coming.
Hey, Naga.
I hope I get my taste back from the meditation. You felt like you were doing the whole COVID.
A COVID meditation.
Losing all our memory and
taste. That can happen, right? That can happen to most of us.
I already feel I forget all the stuff I read, so.
Sorry about that.
I was reading this big, long book of Heart Sutta. I usually find it on internet. This PDF. It's just so elaborate.
I have so many books. Yeah. I keep on referring to all the time. The Echoes of Voidness, The Essence of Heart Sutra, and this His Holiness. I have all of them here. And it's like people are not able to buy it or go to the center, but some of these books are just mind-blowing, really good books.
Thank you. Good night.
Karen, I haven't forgotten. We'll at some point have that discussion on the 12 links in a little more deeper way.
That'd be good. Thank you so much.
Right. Bye, Linda. Thank you, everybody.
Good night. Thank you.
Good night.
Bye, everyone. Bye, Amit.
Good night.